Bekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Bekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we are tackling, well, a really big question, one that seems to define so much of modern American politics. Why does the U.S. Congress, you know, the first supposedly most important branch of government, often seem stuck, like in perpetual gridlock?
It's a huge topic.
So we're diving into Donald A. Ritchie's pretty comprehensive study, The U.S. Congress, to try and figure out if maybe, just maybe, our frustration is a little misplaced.
It's definitely a crucial investigation. I mean, public cynicism about Washington is just sky high, right?
Yeah.
And Ritchie's core insight, it's actually pretty counterintuitive.
Okay.
He argues that the things we often label as dysfunction, you know, the slowness, the intense conflict, how hard it is to pass major laws, these aren't always bugs in the system. Sometimes they're intentional features.
Features? How so?
They're kind of built into the design to force deliberation, to force broad political compromise, to slow things down on purpose.
Okay, so the mission today isn't just about understanding what Congress does, but digging into why it was built the way it was. Getting a handle on that original blueprint, maybe that's the essential shortcut to becoming a more informed political analyst.
Exactly. It forces you to change your metrics, how you judge success.
And Ritchie seems like the perfect guide for this.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
We couldn't ask for someone more authoritative. Donald Ritchie, he wasn't just some academic writing theories from afar. He was the ultimate institutional insider.
Right. He was the historian of the U.S. Senate for, what, over 30 years?
30 years. Yeah. Think about that.
That means he saw it all unfold. The evolution of Senate procedures, different leadership styles, political crises, firsthand across decades.
Totally. He wasn't just reading old documents. He was actively conducting hundreds of oral histories, talking to senators, staff, leadership, capturing that practical wisdom, that institutional memory that, you know, rarely makes it into standard textbooks.
That long view must be invaluable.
It is. It lets him distinguish between, say, a temporary partisan fight and a real deep structural shift within the legislature. He gives us that ground level context, the stuff you need to grasp how the institution really operates day to day.
Okay, let's try and unpack that central premise then. Ritchie's book aims to be a demystifying primer, right? To replace the kind of frustrated eye rolling with a more nuanced understanding. Mm. But if it's working as intended, as you said, why is public satisfaction with Congress so consistently, well, low? Where does Ritchie draw that line between intentional friction and just outright failure?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's the vital tension the book explores. Mm-hmm. Ritchie basically argues Congress embodies the messy, complicated reality of democracy itself.
Okay.
It is functioning largely as the framers intended it to, as this decentralized representative body. And it's designed specifically to ensure that major policy shifts require really broad consensus, multi-regional, multifactional agreement.
So the slowness isn't a bug, it's a feature, a protection.
Exactly. It's protection against what they feared, majority tyranny. It prevents these radical swings based on, you know, a transient public mood or a temporary majority.
So the complexity isn't accidental. It's a kind of defense mechanism. He takes us through that whole journey then, from the constitutional blueprint onwards.
Precisely. Starting right at the beginning, showing how the founders consciously prioritized checks and balances over raw speed. The book aims to make that whole intricate web of rules, the formal ones and the informal norms, understandable.
To show there's a logic underneath it all.
Yeah, deep logic governing legislative behavior, even if the results can be, well, frustratingly slow sometimes.
Okay, let's start right there at the beginning. The Constitutional Foundation, Article 1, it establishes Congress as the number one repository of democratic power.
Right, absolutely. The framers, remember, they'd just broken away from King George. They were obsessed with preventing executive tyranny.
Fear of concentrated power was key.
It defined the whole system. They intentionally structured Congress to be fragmented, almost inherently resistant to acting too quickly or too decisively, unless there was really deep agreement.
And the pivot point for that structure was the Great Compromise, the Connecticut Compromise.
That's the one. That's the moment that created this permanent structural tension right in the heart of our government.
Because you had states wanting representation based on population.
Right. The big states.
And others demanding equal power for each state.
The small states.
Yeah.
And the compromise gave us bicameralism. Two houses, two chambers, serving two distinct masters, in a way.
Okay, unpack that.
Well, you get the House of Representatives, based on population, short 2-year terms. making it hypersensitive to popular will, to quick political shifts.
The immediate pulse.
Yeah. And then you get a Senate. Equal representation for every state, doesn't matter how big or small. And six-year terms. It was designed for stability, to act as a kind of cooling saucer for legislation that might be too hasty, to take the longer view.
So that tension, immediate responsiveness versus long-term stability, it's baked right into the system's DNA from the start.
Literally baked in.
And that structural difference, it must immediately affect how each chamber actually operates day to day.
Oh, profoundly. Look at the House. 435 members.
Mm-hmm.
To function at all, it has to be more centralized, more hierarchical.
Right.
The Speaker of the House wields immense power over the agenda, over the rules, because managing that many people just requires stricter procedures.
And House members, representing smaller districts, they're super sensitive to local politics, right?
Highly sensitive. And that's where you get into the whole challenge of redistricting and gerrymandering, how those district lines are drawn, often to favor one party. It dramatically impacts how representative the House actually is of the overall popular vote sometimes.
Okay, contrasted with the Senate.
The Senate, yeah. It's meant to be the more deliberative body. It's much smaller. Members serve longer terms. And the rules empower the individual senator way more than in the House.
And it has those unique powers, too.
Right, like advice and consent, ratifying treaties, confirming major appointments like judges and cabinet secretaries. But structurally, the thing that really defines the modern Senate is that mechanism designed for individual or minority power, the filibuster.
Ah, the filibuster. Richie talks about its evolution, right? How it went from being pretty rare to almost routine.
Exactly. He tracks how it changed over time.
Can you just quickly clarify the mechanism? Why can one senator talking, or even just threatening to talk, derail the whole process?
Sure, it's because in the Senate, unlike the House, debate is generally unlimited. There's no strict time limit, usually. So, to cut off debate, the formal term is invoking cloture requires a supermajority.
Not just 51 votes.
No, 3/5. Currently, that's 60 votes. So even if a simple majority of, say, 51 or 55 senators support a bill, a determined minority can effectively block it, unless the majority can peel off enough opposition votes to reach that magic number 60.
Which forces bipartisanship, essentially.
It guarantees minority rights, ensures they have a voice, but yeah, the price is legislative efficiency. It fundamentally forces most major legislation towards some kind of bipartisan compromise, or it just doesn't happen.
Okay, so the House, designed more for efficiency, responsiveness. The Senate, stability, minority protection, deliberation. But even with these differences, how does an institution that big, that complex, actually process anything, all the issues?
Right. How does the work get done? The answer is specialization. And that brings us to the committee system, which Richie really details.
The workhorses.
He calls them the workhorses, yeah. He says committees are what transform Congress from just a debating society into a working legislature.
That makes total sense. I mean, the sheer volume and complexity of issues, everything from, I don't know, agriculture, subsidies to cybersecurity to foreign policy, Congress has to delegate the detailed policy work.
Absolutely. Committees act as gatekeepers. They're policy incubators. It's where bills are really debated, where information is gathered from experts, where legislation gets marked up, you know, amended, changed, refined.
And it's where most bills die, right?
Crucially, yes. They control the flow. If a committee doesn't advance a bill, it's usually dead on arrival.
Mm.
And then think about the power of the appropriations committees.
The ones holding the purse strings.
Exactly. They control the money. So even if a policy bill clears its subject committee, it still has to get past the appropriators who decide if it actually gets funded.
Mm.
This whole layered complexity ensures immense scrutiny.
But also immense procedural friction.
Which, again, Richie argues is largely by design.
And this procedural friction, the rules, the committees, this is key to Congress's ultimate leverage over the other branches, too, isn't it? Particularly the executive.
Absolutely. That brings us to oversight and investigation. Congress's ultimate power, the one that endures, is the power of the purse.
Control over taxing and spending.
Right. The president can issue an executive order, propose a big program, but they can't fund any of it without Congress signing off. That's fundamental.
And Richie uses the Watergate hearings as a prime example of oversight in action.
He does. A powerful historical case study. The investigation by that bipartisan Senate committee, the Ervin Committee, really demonstrated Congress's formidable watchdog role. Its power to compel testimony, subpoena documents, and ultimately hold the highest office in the land accountable.
A power that maybe lies dormant sometimes, but it's there.
It's foundational. Ritchie shows it's a check that can dramatically reassert legislative power when Congress chooses to use it.
Okay, so shifting gears a bit, what does all this mean for us, for our perspective, as citizens watching Congress? Ritchie seems to be forcing a complete reframing of how we even view political conflict.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. That's really theme one. Conflict and compromise are built in by design. We hear constantly that Congress is broken or dysfunctional.
All the time.
But Ritchie pushes back. He insists his primary goal wasn't meant to be swift efficiency, like a corporation. It was meant to maximize representation and force consensus among diverse, often competing interests across a huge country.
So if the structure is forcing deliberation, forcing compromise, even if it's messy and slow, from the founder's perspective, it's actually succeeding.
In a fundamental way, yes.
Yeah.
It makes you think, right, about complex decisions maybe in your own work or life. Do you prioritize speed? Or do you sacrifice some of that for thoroughness and making sure everyone feels heard, getting that buy-in? Congress manages that trade-off constantly, just on a massive national scale.
Okay, what's another key theme?
Theme two is the classic two Congresses phenomenon. It helps explain something called the Fennow paradox.
The Fennow paradox. Ring a bell.
It explains why Americans, generally, seem to despise the institution of Congress. You know, see it as this partisan battleground filled with gridlock, but they consistently re-elect their own individual member of Congress, often by wide margins.
Ah, right. It's because their local representative is seen differently. Like, they're viewed as our advocate, our person in Washington, the one who helps with veterans' benefits or social security issues.
Exactly. Delivers casework, brings home local projects, acts like your personal liaison.
While the national body, Congress as a whole, gets judged on the big, messy ideological battles.
Precisely. You judge the national institution on partisan gridlock and dysfunction, but you judge your own representative on personal service, responsiveness. Did they fix my problem?
Which raises a really important question for you, the listener. Are you holding your local representative and the national leadership to two completely different standards? Maybe even impossible standards.
It's something to think about.
And a third theme.
Theme three is institutional evolution and adaptation. Ritchie really emphasizes that Congress isn't some static, unchanging 18th century relic.
It evolves.
It constantly adapts. It changes its rules. Its leadership styles evolve. Think about the difference between, say, a mid-century consensus builder like Speaker Sam Rayburn and modern leaders managing intensely polarized caucuses today, like Nancy Pelosi or others. The procedures adapt to meet new challenges, new social and political landscapes.
So its ability to change, even if it's slow change, is actually a sign of institutional vitality, not decay.
That's his argument. It shows it's still a living institution, responding to the times.
You mentioned Ritchie's decades of insight let him cut through the noise. Are there some specific, memorable takeaways or core ideas he really hammers home?
Oh, definitely. His work is full of lines that make you stop and think. We could share a few core ideas that really capture the essence.
Yeah, let's do that. I'll start with maybe the most challenging one for many people. This idea that Congress is not broken. It is working exactly as the founders designed it to work. Wow. That really forces you to reassess what success even looks like in a legislature.
It's a provocative statement. And another one reinforcing that point is something like, the genius of the American system lies not in its efficiency, but in its capacity to force compromise among competing interests.
So the difficulty in compromising isn't a failure of the system, but the system performing its protective function.
In a way, yes. It's prioritizing inclusiveness, representation, over just speed.
Okay, and what about leadership within Congress?
He has a great line on that, summarizing how things actually get done. Congressional leadership is the art of building coalitions, not giving orders. That distinction is crucial.
Persuading equals versus commanding subordinates.
Exactly. It's fundamental to how democratic bodies, ideally, are supposed to operate. It's not a top-down hierarchy like a military or some corporations.
So how can we, you know, apply this understanding in our own lives? Does Ritchie offer practical takeaways?
Absolutely. There are real-life applications. For instance, if you care about civic engagement, understanding how the committee system works, understanding legislative timing, it's critical.
Right.
Ritchie shows you if you want to advocate effectively for a policy you care about, you don't just write your local member. you need to identify the key committees, the influential chairs, the procedural bottlenecks.
Yeah.
Figure out where your voice, your advocacy, will actually have the most impact in that complex process.
Makes your efforts much more targeted, more effective.
Potentially, yes.
Yeah.
And think about media literacy. This book is invaluable there.
How so?
It gives you the tools to distinguish between, say, the surface political drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the shouting matches you see on cable news, the tweets.
The theater.
Yeah, the theater. To distinguish that from the deeper structural issues playing out. Things like procedural votes, committee reports, those cloture motions we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the process helps you become a much more critical news consumer.
Mm.
Less likely to be swayed by oversimplified narratives.
That's a really useful skill.
And you can even take lessons for leadership in other complex organizations. If you lead a team, a company, a nonprofit. Richie's analysis of consensus building in Congress has parallels.
Like what?
Like how effective leadership often involves persuading and negotiating among diverse stakeholders, not just issuing commands. Valuing institutional memory, balancing the need for quick action with ensuring genuine participation and buy-in.
Interesting. So, wrapping up, what's the single biggest insight you took away from Richie's work?
For me, I think it really is that paradigm shift he forces on you. We have to stop judging Congress solely by corporate standards of efficiency and speed. That's the wrong yardstick.
Instead,
maybe judge it by its success or failure in representation, in fostering genuine debate, and in building consensus, however painfully slow, among 535 individuals who represent this vast, incredibly diverse, often contradictory nation.
That's a profound shift in perspective. My final thought is similar. Richie's work feels like a vital antidote to just reflexive cynicism.
Yeah.
It doesn't excuse genuine failures or bad behavior, but it reminds us that the complexity of Congress, its messiness, it mirrors the complexity and messiness of America itself.
Well said. It remains this essential, if imperfect, forum for the whole American democratic experiment to continue playing out.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker. Another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.